I thought I'd start with a little story. I saw my brother recently, as you guys know, because I went to Germany. I have many brothers, but there's one that's my brother that I grew up with. We're tight. But every once in a while when I'm studying something or thinking back, there's a memory. I think I've told you the story before, but I'm going to tell you again. I went through some teenage years where I felt really confident about things. I was pretty comfortable with certain things in life, and my brother wasn't. And I thought I was really good with words, and so I would use words to tease my brother a lot, because, well, I was comfortable where I was at, and I felt I could get away with it. I had power. I was the older brother. I had more strength, more verbal ability, and I would tease him until he went into a murderous rage and would come after me with a knife or something. And then I would talk him down and get his forgiveness, and we're best of pals again. Now that I'm older, well, for a long time now, whenever I remember this, there's a sense of shame, right? Because I realize what I did over and over again to him, and that it was wrong. And I've come into agreement with the Lord that, you know, doing that is straight up evil. It's funny to tell the story a little bit because, you know, we were kids, and kids do what kids do, but I don't even know what kind of psychological damage I did to him during those times, right? When I look at my brother and I go, oh, he's got these issues, was that me? Maybe. We affect the people around us, and we use the resources and the strength that we have to influence people. We're in James. I wanted to start off by hitting chapter 4, verse 9 again. We talked about this recently. James 4, 9, be miserable and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy to gloom. When we talked about this a few weeks ago, my emphasis for this little piece was come into agreement with the Lord that your actions sometimes are very wrong and they make God sad. They make him miserable. He mourns and weeps. Are you taking his side on that? Is that your perspective? Take it. Take that perspective. Look at your sin and the things that you're doing and realize how God sees it and come into agreement with that. And we know that the more power you have, the more good you can do, right? But the more power you have, the more you can also wreak havoc. The more destruction can be in your wake, right? We know the saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That sort of describes that. As you go up the ladder in power and wealth and influence and in anything that you can obtain, ability, skill, that comes with a responsibility to use it well and to not misuse it. And so this verse 9, if we jump down into chapter 5, he addresses those with power, and he says something similar as in chapter 4. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. God is going to judge. Do you recognize, you rich people, that God is going to judge you? You have all this power. What have you done with it? And he adds this concept of the miseries are coming upon you. God is going to judge. It is right at the door. Before we get into the passage, though, I wanted to take a peek real quick at Ephesians 4:28. And this is not talking to rich people. He who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good. Why? So that he will have something to share with the one who has need. So there's a basic concept here that even the poor man, the poorest of the poor, the one who would steal to get by, should instead work in order to share some resources with others. In fact, some of this concept, John the Baptist's job was to prepare the way for the Lord, right? Is make straight the path. He's supposed to get the Jewish people, those who would listen, prepared and acting the right way and coming in agreement with God in general, so that when Jesus comes, there's sort of a foundation laid. They're already kind of going in the right direction. If we look at Luke 3:10. And this is concerning John the Baptist. Luke chapter 3, verse 10. And the crowds were questioning him, saying, "What shall we do?" And he would answer and say to them, "The man who has two tunics, is to share with him who has none, and he who has food is to do likewise." So just even the basics and getting people ready for Jesus to come, this was a basic instruction. Care for the people around you. Do you have resources? Share your resources with those around you. So this is a very basic concept that even precedes any kind of fancy teaching in the New Testament. It's before Jesus came, before the apostles did the teaching, this was the foundation of what the Jews needed to understand before Jesus even showed up. All right, back to James. Chapter 5. Verse 2. "Your riches have rotted, and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted." So, we know gold and silver don't rust, but the symbolism is very clear here. Riches rotted, and garments have become moth-eaten, and things have rusted. Your valuables have rusted. I sometimes have things that I don't have room for. And sometimes they end up outside. In fact, I have a bad habit of doing this. It's a cool thing. I could use it someday. And so they rust and they rot. This is talking to rich people. And he's saying, you have stuff that is not properly taken care of. You have stuff that you're hoarding, that you're not putting to use. It's not even what you need for your daily activity, because it wouldn't be rusted if you were using it in your daily activity. Your clothes, you're not even wearing those. They're moth-eaten in a closet somewhere. Resources are to be shared, and your resources are rotting. Your riches have rotted, and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted. And their rust will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. When, as I mentioned, I sometimes have stuff that I can't take care of, and I held on to it, and I don't know why. And when I see it, it's evidence, right? Now I have to take a dump run or go for a dump run with these things. But these things are evidence, and God is like, you're storing up evidence against you. They will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. It is in the last days that you have stored up your treasure. The last days. Now, some people think that this last days might be referring to, you know, the time that we're in, you know, the time between Jesus and the end. But I'm really feeling like it's probably more of like, this is your eulogy, right? Like, judgment is coming for real to everybody. You have this little piece of time. What's your eulogy? If you think about the end of your life, have you ever heard of anybody, and this is kind of cliche, but nobody's ever been like, I wish I would have spent more time at work, right? That's usually what they say. The idea is it would have been nice to have spent more time with family. I wish I would have left a legacy in my family, taught people things, spent time. And these guys are storing up gold to elevate themselves, make themselves feel good. What do you want to leave behind? What is your eulogy? What are you saving up for the last, and in the last days? These are the last days, your last days. You don't know how long you're going to live, and even if you're going to live 50 years more, 100 years more, maybe a couple of these little ones. What are you going to leave? What are you going to have at the end? Is it going to be a pile of gold? Is it going to be an awesome career that's been over for a few years? Or is it going to be community? Did you share with others? Did you build up the world around you? It is in the last days that you have stored up your treasure. Behold the pay of the laborers who mowed your field and which has been withheld by you cries out against you. These people didn't just have, or these people don't just have a lot of money. They're taking advantage of people. Kind of like with my brother. Not only did I feel confident, but I had to tear him down, right, to make myself feel even better. So too, these rich men, not only are they rich, but they need your money too. And the poor man's money. And the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Let me see here. Now, the Lord of Sabaoth is the Lord of hosts, I believe, based on my little study. It's basically Yahweh who is at the head of the army of God, and you're the enemy. When you use your resources to not only keep for yourself and to hoard for yourself, but worse, when you're the one who takes the resources from someone else when you have plenty. something that came to mind while I was studying, looking at this, was a good example of someone who did something like this was King David. And King David, a man after God's own heart, great legacy, really, in the big picture. The Lord forgave him. But he had women and money. And what did he do? He took somebody else's wife and killed the man. And God judged. His son had to die. God took his son. God does not take this sort of thing lightly. Verse 5. You have lived luxurious on the earth and led a life of want and pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. So, you have the other guy's money. You have your money. And you did it up. That's what he's saying here. You really did it up. And you did it up on the back of the poor. What an ugly picture. You have condemned the poor, you have condemned and put to death the righteous man. He does not resist you. This is actually where I was going to tell the story about Bathsheba. But because he most literally did kill the husband. And in most cases, the rich don't go out killing people. That would be weird. But who fights the wars and who are the wars for? The wars aren't for you and me. There's no time where I'm like, man, I have an enemy in wherever, some kind of Kistan. right? I don't have any enemies over there. The rich have enemies over there. So we are the poor are fighting for the rich and dying. Whose back is being destroyed and whose vitality is propping up the rich? It's the poor man. You have condemned the poor man and put him to death. The righteous man does not resist you. And I don't think the concept, and every time I read this in the past, I thought, man, why does the righteous man not resist? And it's the righteous man here is not just a righteous man, he's a poor man. He's a man who does not have the power to resist, really. He's just living life. In the end, you need to try and go out there and you need to make some money. And the rich man is keeping you down, right? The man, he's got the power. But that is not to diss on rich people. This is talking about rich people. Rich people are a great object lesson. Why? Because it's the extreme, right? It's the extreme of our experience. Because whatever your sin nature is, give you $1 million and we'll see it. Right? Because right now it's subdued. You can't do much with it. Right? You might have some bad opinions and you may give them. You might hate someone, but you can't do anything about it because you have no power and money. Somebody gives you a giant pile of funds and that'll come out. And so rich people are a beautiful object lesson. And I think James really takes advantage of that in this book. I'd like to take a quick peek at, where is it? 1 Timothy. First Timothy, 6:17. He He knew what chapter before I said it. That's an indication. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Did you know that some people are rich and God supplied it for them to enjoy? It's okay to enjoy your riches if you're sharing it and if you're taking care of your responsibilities and not stealing it from others' labor and that sort of thing. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. In America in general, we're pretty rich. And while I was in Germany with my brother, this is a different subject altogether, it's always fun to see other political views from people in a different country because they're not stuck in the Republican-Democrat universe we're stuck in, right? And so they always have a slightly different perspective, often very annoying because they hate some of our politics that I actually am okay with. And that can get frustrating, but wow, where was I going? Yeah. My brother in Germany.
Perspective.
More. That's okay. So we were talking about money in America, we want to make sure that we're economically sound and immigration and where our products are built and that sort of thing. And he was talking about the way countries take turns, right? Like one country builds all the stuff because the labor is cheap, which makes that country rich, which then means that they don't work as hard in a different country, then starts producing all the stuff. And I found that very, very interesting. But we're so rich in America, we often don't think that much about the people who are building our stuff. And even though we're not responsible for the atrocities done by some big companies, it is a natural thing that the rich take advantage of the poor. They don't even think about it. It just sort of happens. And it takes a lot of intentionality when you have power to be concerned and to go out of your way a little bit for those who don't have it, right? And we need to do that in general as Americans, watching out where this comes from a little bit. I'm not saying you should do research every time you buy a shirt. Please don't. That gets weird. But if you're aware that a company is doing really bad things with your money, be careful what you vote for. Be careful what you do with your riches. But mostly, what I want to end at today is pointing out that, you know, I have my areas of richness. It's not money. I promise. I do drive a nice Jeep, and I enjoy that. And the Lord gave it to me, and so I will enjoy it. But aside from my Jeep, pretty much, like, I'm broke most days. But you know what I do have? I have a family and kids, and I'm the man that comes with power. What am I doing with it? Am I spending that power, that authority, to help them, to encourage them, to support them? Or am I using that power to come home, where's my dinner, woman? And like get mad because my clothes are not all washed and put away nicely on my shelf, or, you know, Yeah, or am I coming home supporting my wife in some way, or having a good conversation with her and loving the people around me? The same at my work, right? I have power at work. I'm the boss. I've been there for so many years that the owners can't even really mess with me anymore, right? Because they want the business just kind of exist and hopefully make a little bit of money. And if they fired me, that would be a lot of work for them. So I can do whatever I want pretty much. It's a lot of fun sometimes. So how do I use that? Do I use that to make the owner some money and to take care of my employees and support them? Or do I, you know, just go get mad when they don't take care of things properly and just use them to try and make some more money so that I can make more money, right? And use them as my people that are just my slaves, if you will, American slaves. It's not true slavery, but, you know, how am I using them? We all have influence. I get to stand up here, right? When I walk away from up here, am I like prancing around, you know, hoping that people treat me with extra respect or something? Or do I find opportunities to help other people based on the fact that maybe they have a question and I can answer it? Or just not take advantage of my position at all and help somebody walk out to their car or whatever it is, you know? And so I want to ask you guys, like, do you have areas of power, responsibility, money, talent that are, and are you using those things to grow the body of Christ and the people around you and to build up your family and your communities? Thoughts? Questions?
That's a really good question. Thank you.
Don't prance. Yeah. Yes, sir.
The biggest problem I see with the gathering of the extra tools you have, mm-hmm. I have, the gold, whatever, is the realization that we can't take it with us.
No. Yeah.
It's, you know, Jack Benny said at one time, if I can't take it with me, I'm not going. Well, he went.
Right. Yeah, that's why he says, in the last days you have stored this up. Yes, sir.
I will admit, I'm a horrible junker. I collect everything. Yeah. Everything has value to me. But I don't hoard it. Just the other week, I was with a bunch of old guys I hang out with at CJ Coffee every Thursday. And Tony was, man, boy, I really could use this water tank. I just have no water tank. I really need it. Tony, I'm your guy. I got a 500-gallon tank just sitting at my house waiting for you.
Nice.
Right on.
Yeah.
And that's what my stuff is there for. It's not just for me. It is for everyone.
Yeah.
You know? It'll scream out somebody's name.
Sooner or later. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. Anybody else?
One more thing.
Yes, sir.
I always thought this really interesting. The Tibetan people, when they pass, they don't give their stuff to their family members. They don't have a will. Mm-hmm. They don't have any of that. It gets burned with them. And then if they have animals, those animals get slaughtered, and they have a feast in celebration of their life. But none of their stuff is transferred over to others. What they've earned, what they've done in life is theirs and theirs alone. I just thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
And it kind of molds a little bit to that, only in that you can't take it with you.
That's true.
And it sure is a pain in the butt when families get to headbutt over coinage and stupid stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It was their stuff.
Huh. Okay. Everybody starts from scratch.
Yeah. Oh, well, Christian. Creator provides, always.
Yeah.
That's the main, I think, anthem that I hear, is that Creator provides. It doesn't matter about your hoarding stuff. Mm-hmm. Because when you absolutely need that, provides.
Right. Right. The Lord does provide. And you can be the tool that God uses to provide for somebody.
So
yes, sir.
One of the perspectives that has been in my mind however years ago, realizing this question is so appropriate. Whatever it is, just address money to start with, money that I have. Do I own it or does it own me?
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference. And really, am I the owner or am I simply the steward who really owns it? If it owns me, I'm in trouble.
Is that you?
Yeah. I have a friend who, in our hour of need when we had Carl, he donated his time. He came, he helped, he did everything. He was there day after day for a couple months. And he fell on hard times. He was laid off, and then he had a motorcycle accident. And he was so selfless, and he did a GoFund account so that he could pay his rent for the next couple months.
Mm-hmm.
And I have contributed, and as well as my family members. But I look at it now, and it's like he really needs the help. And in sharing and giving to him, as well as anyone else in that situation, I think that goes to showing how to take care of your money and your friends.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's close it up. Lord God, we come before you in the name of your Son, who's redeemed us and made us one family, your family, Lord, and your body, your church. Lord, and I'm very grateful that you design us in such a way that it is our job to be there for each other and to take care of one another's needs, Lord. Help us as a body in Tacoma, this body specifically, Lord, I ask that you teach us to be there for one another in a deeper way, that you teach us how to give to one another and how to receive. It's the other side of that coin we didn't talk about today, Lord, but teach us to need one another and to be there for one another. Please bless our conversation during this time in between and prepare us for the next message. May you be glorified in our midst this morning. Amen.